They said this on their website. It's divided into three phases and is, quote, sure to get you confused.
I just want to believe that the person who runs this is Elsa Clack, who runs the Quiet Cornbread and Breakfast.
Yes, probably. Very, very plausible.
You get out and you get a German muffin.
Oh, no. And there's cats everywhere.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Parks and Rewatch. I'm your host, Joe.
And I'm Joy.
And today we are diving into Season 3, Episode 7, Harvest Festival.
I've been waiting for this one since the beginning. Do you see my shirt?
I do see your shirt.
For those who are not having the pleasure of watching us right now, I have. And I met Lil Sebastian at the Pawnee Harvest Festival shirt, and I'm very proud of it.
Yes, we are very excited. I think most of our listeners have probably been anticipating this episode just as much as we have. Because, you know, if you're outside sort of the Parks and Rec circle, you might not understand the significance of an episode that's seven episodes into a full season. It's not what you would call a mid-season finale. It's not a season finale. But it's so significant to Parks and Recreation as a show. It's so foundational to what makes Parks and Recreation what it is. And I think we're all so excited to dive into it.
Such a good turning point.
Also like to say a quick hello to our Patreon A-team
Hi.
Who are joining us for this recording. And also just to compound the fun, my wife and I both are recovering from COVID. So that's been going on in our world.
No
Lots
dying.
Of fun there.
No dying. I need you.
No dying.
Stop it.
It was pretty not fun. Few days with a fever of around 100 degrees and throat feeling very painful and coughing and stuff. So that's why I'm sounding a little more husky at the moment.
Husky.
But we've both rounded a corner and we're both doing okay. So grateful for that. Pretty much we're both just very weak and tired all the time.
Yes, Crystal, Husky Joe should be his new nickname.
Sidebar, no.
Denied. All right, Joe, what happens in today's episode?
So in today's episode, the much anticipated Harvest Festival has finally arrived. But as Leslie and the Parks Department see to the final details, the chief of the Wamapoke tribe threatens to put a curse on the Harvest Festival. Also, we finally meet Lil Sebastian.
It's and about we will, time.
It is. And we'll unpack that for sure as we go along. But for now, Joy, do you have some episode behind the scenes and trivia for
do
us?
Do I have trivia? Who are you asking? Me.
Not Husky Joe.
Wait, would you ask yourself? Have a whole conversation with yourself. Hey, Husky Joe. Hey, it's me, Normal Joe. Hey, Normal Joe. Anyway, this is the first episode of Season 3 that was not recorded directly after Season 2 to accommodate for Amy Poehler's pregnancy. So there's a nice little break in there. And it didn't feature Rob Lowe, as they still thought he was not going to be coming back except as a guest every so often.
I never noticed that until this episode.
I wonder what this episode would have been like if Rob would have been in it.
I don't know. That's a good question.
It just would have been one more dimension of glory. This is our first meeting with Ken Hotate. I love that his name is
Gosh,
Ken.
Dang it. I'm sorry. I didn't. It just two thoughts came to my head and derailed at the same time.
What happened?
Husky Joe is my Duke Silver.
Oh my gosh.
And Dimensions of Glory would be the name of my first album. And
new
I
album
hate
name,
myself
I call
for
it.
Thinking of that. Oh my gosh. I couldn't handle that. Oh. This is COVID brain at work.
Oh, so far we're off to a great start.
So sorry. Please continue.
This is our first meeting with Ken Hotate. The Harvest Festival scenes were shot at Los Angeles Pierce College during the annual Halloween Harvest Festival, and an aerial shot of the festival itself was the most expensive shot in the series. The annual festival unfortunately shut down in 2014. For the record, I looked it up. The corn maze was 5 acres.
Okay.
I don't know why I needed to say that, but it's fine. I wrote it in the notes. This episode is the first time you see an aerial shot of Pawnee as a town, and the only other time is the last episode with Anne and Chris.
Very interesting.
IMDb had lots of things to say. So they said the haunted house in Poltergeist was built on a regular cemetery, which explicitly was not tribal land. So that reference is null. When Jerry first brings little Sebastian into the office, it cuts to everyone's excited reaction and then cuts to Jerry bringing the horse back into the room a second time.
That's
which
interesting.
I did not see.
Yeah, I kind of looked for it and it didn't seem very obvious. So
yeah. Well, when Ron says Tom and Jerry get along, this is a reference to the cat and mouse Tom and Jerry, which I thought was fun because I did not catch that.
That is fun. Seems mm-hmm. more like a subtle reference than a big in-your-face Easter egg, but that's still really funny.
It is, because I like Tom and Jerry.
Oh, yes.
The book that Ron's reading at the Harvest Festival is The Nutmeg of Consolation by Patrick O'Brien, the 14th book of the Aubrey Maturin series, the same series from which the Peter Weir film Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World, starring Russell Crowe, was drawn.
Again, that just seems like such a Ron Swanson book.
So we're diving right on in. What is a harvest festival? Of course, I had to look it up because we're starting from the basis of we all got to be on common ground. So what is a harvest festival? So Wikipedia said it's an annual celebration that occurs around the time of main harvest of a given region. Given the differences in climate and crops around the world, harvest festivals can be found at various times at different places. Harvest festivals typically feature feasting. That and the word right above it is festivals. Festivals feature feasting, both family and public, with foods that are drawn from crops that come to maturity around the time of the festival. Ample food and freedom from the festivals feasting feature freedom.
In your defense, they are just throwing down all kinds of things for you to trip over.
From the fields. Oh my gosh. From...
from the this necessity. Is like a sentence from one of those learn to read books or something.
Okay, we can just sum it up. Harvest festivals have feasting and there's food and freedom because you don't have to work in the fields anymore. I don't need to read the rest.
So is there something akin to a harvest festival where you're from or where you grew up?
We called harvest festivals the Christian version of trick-or-treating.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that what you were getting too. At?
No, our town did actually have an annual festival around harvest time.
Oh, okay.
It was like the biggest thing that happened in the town, and it was very Haxton named. It was just called the Corn Festival.
Well, what do you say it like that? 1,000
people, Corn Festival. Yeah, it happened every October. And so, yeah, this would be my closest frame of reference for a harvest festival.
Did your church have a substitute to trick-or-treating? Yeah.
And that was called Harvest Festival growing up. I think that was all it was ever called. I want to say my mom, when my dad was pastoring the church, came up with like a more creative homeschool style name for it. But I'm struggling to remember what that was.
Mm. Marie just said that her church called it a hallelujah party.
I remember hallow him. Like hallow hyphen capital H-I-M him. It was a hallow him party. Oh, man.
I feel uncomfortable. That is bad Husky
Lisa
Joe.
You says that is bad Husky Joe. Yes, it was. Yes, oh. It was.
So harvest festivals were a really big thing. And here's some poetry I found about it. Merry, merry, merry. Cheery, cheery, cheery. Trowel the black bowl to me. Hey, dearie, dearie, with a Pope and a Larry. It'll troll it again to the hooky hooky, we have shorn and we have bound and we have brought harvest home to town.
That started out real weird and then got normal in the last stanza.
I wonder if I like missed the rhythm or something. Anyway, the shout of hooky hooky appears to be one traditionally associated with the harvest celebration. English settlers took the harvest Thanksgiving festival to America. The most famous one is the quote unquote Thanksgiving that we celebrated, which started in 1621. And there is so much fascinating history about harvest festivals on Wikipedia. So
that
do yourself
is
a favor.
Fascinating. I wonder if hooky hooky is like the precursor to dilly dilly.
Ooh.
Hooky hooky.
Well, I mean, they did say dairy dairy. Can you read this in a Scottish accent, please?
Which, the poem?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm going to, the patrons are here, so I feel obligated to give it my best shot. Merry, merry, merry. Cheery, cheery, cheery. Throw the black bull to me. Hey, derry, derry, with a poop in the larry. You'll troll it again to the hooky, hooky. We have shorn and we've bound. And we've brought harvest home to town. That's as good as it's going to get.
Did you ever play The Lost Mind of Dr. Brain?
No.
Okay, well, there was a line you said in one of the games. He would say, now give me the red bowl. And that's what it... Throw the black bowl to me. Anyway... Thank you, Joe. I'm so proud of you. All right, so we got to break it down. Pony versus miniature horse. What's the big deal? So let's start it off with some warm feels. Ken Tucker from Entertainment Weekly said, "You cannot underestimate the role that Lil Sebastian played in making this an episode that deepened our understanding of the characters, the town of Pawnee, and the underlying philosophy of Parks and Recreation. The mini horse, Sebastian, age 25, I like that he put age 25 in there. Makes it feel more human. Afflicted by cataracts and arthritis, sparked elation among everyone who works with Leslie, even poker-faced April, Too Cool Tom, and dour expression Ron. Everyone's face lit up in a different manner, a testament to the great ride of acting styles harnessed on this show at the sight of the animal." Why? This is actually why I put it in here. Because this felt like a really good story turn.
Mm-hmm.
Ben was our surrogate in this, as he and we initially wondered what was the big deal about a pony. It's not a pony, he kept being told. It's a mini horse. It was because, without condescending to their creations for a second, the Parks and Rec writers let us know that, in some parts of this great land, there are people who aren't jaded, who are open to wonderment, who find vessels in which to pour their joy. This is what Lil Sebastian represented to everyone on the show. Except Ben, who didn't get it until he got it, which is to say, until he dropped his defenses and got into the spirit of the Harvest Festival. So that was just a really interesting story point. And what stuck out to me from that was the wonderment. Like, because you see everyone in their wonderment element.
Yeah.
During this episode. And I think that's what I love.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I'm going to unpack the story element of it a little more. Further down, because I just think that Lil Sebastian and what he represents to the characters and to the mythos of the show is just fascinating.
5 points for the word mythos.
I love the word mythos.
All right, let's define and classify miniature horses versus ponies. Wikipedia said that miniature horses are horses defined by their small height. They can be found in many nations, particularly in Europe and the Americas, and are the result of centuries of selective breeding. So they're usually less than 34 to 38 inches as measured at the last hairs of the mane, which are found at the withers. I didn't know that there was a thing on a horse called a wither, but it's that bone at the top middle of their back. Did you know it was a wither?
Yeah, I grew up around horses, so right. I knew what withers were.
I was homeschooled, but I grew up in the city, so... While miniature horses fit a height-based definition to be considered a very small pony, many retain horse characteristics and are considered horses by their respective registries. So that's interesting. Miniature horses are generally bred to be friendly and interact well with people. They're often kept as family pets, though they still retain natural horse behavior, including the natural fight-or-flight instinct, and they must be treated like an equine, even if they primarily serve as a companion animal. They can even be service animals. I saw pictures of people with tiny horses as service animals.
That's fascinating.
And the only thing I could think of is what happens if he poops. Okay, this is sad. Miniature horses were first developed in Europe in the 1600s, and by 1765, they were seen frequently as the pets of nobility. Others were used in coal mines in England, and the English began using the small ponies after the Mines and Collieries Act of 1842 prohibited the use of young children as mine workers. I can't.
Tough sell.
I can't do it. Horse or pony? There's an ongoing debate over whether a miniature horse should possess horse or pony characteristics. It's common controversy and a hot debate between... This is just one of those subculture conversations where it's...
Absolutely.
I'm just going to say it like it's normal, of course. This is a common debate between mini aficionados and other horse and pony breed owners. I would like to see them debate, please and thank you. Anyway, all kinds of other stuff about miniature horses and ponies. So we're just going to go with it. Little Sebastian's a miniature horse. We're good. We can move on. Anyway, did you see his horse booties?
Yes, I did.
I didn't know that horses could have booties either, but then I did a whole little mini research dive just into horse booties. It was amazing. And if you're a patron on Patreon, you can see the link that I linked in the show notes. Bum, bum, bum. Miniature horses usually live between 25 and 30 years, which plays out with what we know of little Sebastian. So proud of that. And he has an honorary degree. So, of course, I had to look up, has a horse ever received an honorary degree? And the answer is yes. In 2018, UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine awarded a 19-year-old horse an honorary degree for being a Master of Equine Educator.
Aww. Well, since we're talking about mini horses, this is just a one-off I threw in the show notes because when else can I do this? I have pictures from my youth of me in a grassy field surrounded by a herd of mini horses, and I'm pretty sure I peaked right in that moment.
I'm so pretty sure that's pretty adorable.
Those will be in the show notes for you patrons. Surrounded by mini horses, literally.
So they say that little Sebastian is the 8th most photographed object in America for a week. And then Leslie says, suck it, the Alamo. And I was like, no. So I, of course, had to do some research. Are there records for most photographed whatever? Well, kind of. None of them are super current. So... Mm-hmm. GourmetTraveler.com as of 2017 said that Eiffel Tower in Paris, Big Ben in London, the Louvre, Empire State Building, Burj Khalifa, Notre Dame, St. Peter's Basilica, Times Square, and Sagrada Familia in Barcelona are the most worldwidely photographed. I don't think that makes sense.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, I think these days, because people in our chat are wondering how you would track that. I think these days, it wouldn't necessarily be exhaustive or all-encompassing, but you could just use hashtags to track pictures.
Or location metadata.
Which would simplify some of it. Yeah, yeah. So still seems very overwhelming.
Lisa just said, good point, HJ. This is why we have patrons on. Yeah. Okay, so the next string of research I went on, I found an article, and I looked at it after I wrote everything down. It's from Condé Nast.
I saw that one coming. Condé Nast.
So they said that in New York City, the Guggenheim is the world's most photographed tourist attraction. Niagara Falls, Chicago, just all of Chicago and all of San Francisco. They just have like a bunch of cities. But none of them, I did so much research to try to find, is the Alamo even on these lists? And the answer was no. Suck it, the Alamo.
All right, well, before we move on from Lil Sebastian, you all know how much I love my story threads and character archetypes, and how could I not attempt to look at perhaps the most legendary piece of the Parks and Rec mythos through that lens? But Lil Sebastian's not exactly a character. He doesn't have a dynamic arc. He doesn't really interact with the other characters or have any overt character traits himself. And as the characters themselves point out, he resists the need for them. Mm-hmm. His merit is intrinsic. So for my money, and the topic of this little essay, is that Little Sebastian is a symbol. He's not a facade like the Wizard of Oz, where once the illusion is dispelled, so is the magic. Mm-hmm. He's a magic mirror, enabling the show's most jaded characters to instantly be transported to parts of themselves they can't access on their own.
I love that.
He is Pawnee's totem, granting a grumpy, polarized town the ability to simply come together and laugh and experience childlike wonder.
Mm-hmm.
He is the force. Being mocked or misunderstood has zero effect on him. Like our favorite Jedi Knights, death doesn't diminish his impact. It only serves to amplify it to those who are connected to it.
I really hope you're proud of yourself right now, because this is beautiful.
Thank you. I did go pretty deep on this, and I am very proud of it. Despite only physically appearing in one episode of the entire show.
Seriously?
Seriously.
What?
I don't count the hologram of him that appears later, because he is deceased at that point. So physically, Little Sebastian appears only in this episode.
Oh my gosh.
So despite only physically appearing in one episode of the entire show, his presence is woven throughout the entire series. It's part of its DNA. His song is the anthem for our characters' triumphs and for their most heartfelt connected moments. And for those of us who love the show and keep coming back to it, even though its own life ended, Corona episode and potential reunion notwithstanding, it's our anthem too.
Mm-hmm.
Because we understand it's not really about a mini horse funeral. That'd be like saying the Odyssey is about a guy who has to take a detour on his way home from a work trip. Lil Sebastian, his anthem, and our love for Parks and Rec is the indefinable, can't quite put your finger on it, ember inside all of us that warms our hearts with the celebration of connection, wonder, and hope. It's reuniting with old friends after a long journey. It's coming in from playing in a Norman Rockwell snowy afternoon to a cup of hot chocolate with marshmallows. It's like celebrating a holiday full of traditions that we've honored over and over again with the same enthusiasm that we did the very first time. It's everything that might not make sense to other people, but doesn't matter because it sparks joy in us, and that's important. It's joie de vivre. It's Little Sebastian.
Ladies and gentlemen, Husky Joe.
Oh my goodness.
That was beautiful.
Yeah, as soon as I kind of started looking at Little Sebastian as a literary device and looking at his effect on the show, I think the first thing came from realizing that he does only appear in the flesh in this one episode. And, you know, if you think about the degree to which, say, like John Ralphio is associated with the show, despite only appearing in a handful of episodes, Little Sebastian only appears in one. Technically, yeah, a hologram appears of him and some video footage and of an impersonator and things like that. But still, I think that all just goes to show what an effect this mini horse has on the show. Greater.
Oh, okay. Bringing your A game. Shoo. Wow. Okay. We're going to turn a corner from that beautiful moment, and we're just going to go straight back to facts, because that was a lot of feelings and it was beautiful, but I got to get back in my facts. So Leslie says that it's Indiana's largest corn maze. So I, of course, had to check that. She's wrong. because it was only 5 acres. So in 2017, it was just so funny. So many websites said they were the largest, and then it was like, oh, Northeast Indiana's largest or Southern Indiana's largest. It's like, oh, okay, I see your little game.
That kind of sounds like when Pawnee's town signs were doing like the, we're the Akron of Southeast Indiana.
Right. So in 2017, the Northeast Indiana's largest was Amazing Fall Fun Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch in Waterloo, Indiana, which comes in at a whopping 12 acres.
Okay.
2018, quote, the area's Indiana's largest corn maze. What is that sentence structure? Was 20 acres, Stranger Things themed, had over 10 miles of paths, and was held at Exploration Acres in Lafayette, Indiana.
Okay.
2019, the largest corn maze in Southern Indiana was also 12 acres. Connor Prairie was the place, and their design was a headless horseman and had 3 options built in, a long, short, and a haunted path.
Wow.
In 2020, the Amazing Fall Fun Corn Maze was 20 acres, and they called it a maze, capital M, capital A, lowercase I, capital Z, capital E. I see okay. You with your corn puns.
Okay.
They said this on their website. It's divided into 3 phases and is, quote, sure to get you corn-fused.
I just want to believe that the person who runs this is Elsa Clack, who runs the Quiet Corn Bread and Breakfast.
Yes, probably. Very, very plausible.
You get out and you get a German muffin.
Oh, no. And there's cats everywhere. Ah! No. Their design this year at that corn maze was from The Mandalorian, which is cool. Way to be trendy.
This is the way.
Also in 2020, Farm Life, formerly known as Deer Farms of Lanesville, Indiana, has a 14-acre corn maze, which makes it bigger than Connor Prairie, but I couldn't find a picture of their design, so that was sad. So the winner comes in at 20 acres. In the ending shot, it looks like there's an actual installed roller coaster, which I didn't see in my research. I don't feel like there would be an actual installed roller coaster, like bolted down to cement footers for a week-long carnival. So I'm very confused about that. I have questions.
I didn't deep dive that, but to my filmmaker's eyes, that looks like CGI when they're pulling away. It looks like they put that in post. So that would be my guess. I'm not going to die on that hill because, like I said, I didn't deep dive it. But
totally valid. Now it is time for the text. The hallowed text that we have not heard from in a very long time. Okay, let me find my correct sticky note. I'm not going to read all of these, but there are 5 pages that are applicable to today. So there's an entire 2-page spread about Pawnee Harvest Festival. And I'm just going to read you the highlights. The Harvest Festival, Pawnee's greatest tradition. Welcome to story time with Joy. In November of 1938, local farmer Quentin Arbel found himself with a massive pumpkin surplus. Not wanting the pumpkins to just rot in his field, he opened his farm to neighborhood kids, inviting them to pick as many pumpkins as they could carry, and giving them free rides in a hay-filled trailer pulled by 20 of his strongest turkeys. Despite the many, many injuries and ensuing lawsuits, a Pawnee tradition had been born. The Harvest Festival. It was pulled by turkeys. Somebody wrote this. Yes, Joe.
Lisa is asking for breathier, please.
Let me see what I can do. For more than half a century, the Harvest Festival was one of Pawnee's most beloved institutions. Oh, come on now.
Yes. Oh, nicely done, Marie.
In an accent, please. Okay, let me see.
No, did you see the next thing she said?
I'm going to ignore that. Uh, For more than half a century, the Harvest Festival is one of Pawnee's most beloved institutions, a magnet for tourists from southern Indiana and beyond, who would come here to gaze and wonder at how fat our citizens were and also to attend the Harvest Festival. From its humble beginnings, it blossomed into a week-long event featuring rides, attractions, food courts, animal exhibits, history tents. Pawnee actually had something to crow about. Until, tragically, in 1989, budget cuts and a partially ill-timed and extremely public carny streak. Footnote. Streaking was one of those things that Pawnee citizens kind of just quietly tolerated from the carnies who worked at the Harvest Festival rides every year, but 1989 was the last straw. The carnies working the 89 festival did a bunch of crank, took off all their clothes and ran screaming through the center of town right in the middle of the Pawnee Harvest Breastival. Breast Cancer Awareness 5K Walk for the Cure. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. I didn't pre-read this. I probably should have. Here are some quotable memories from the Harvest Festival. They used to have something called crackling clouds. It was a kind of cotton candy machine that used pork fat instead of spun sugar. It is delicious. I still think about it every fall when the air kind of feels like it used to around Harvest Festival time. Also, when I write checks to that credit consolation company, what's helping me pay off my angioplasty? Sherm Goss, Pawnee police captain, retired. This next section is facial warm-ups. Joan goes, mwah, mwah, murder. Murder the most melons. Shakila showered shame on Shakira's sheets. Are you proud of me?
I am proud of you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. So I looked up what are other newscaster warm-ups, because when I was a newscaster at my school, the teacher taught me how to do these warm-ups and it drove me nuts. And I was like, this is dumb. Why do I have to do this? But this is actually a real thing. So if you put two fingers on either side of your throat and you push it back and forth, there's little crunchies in there.
Yeah, I think I remember you showing me that.
I don't like that, but loosen those up a little bit. Ugh. And then I looked up a YouTube video of reporter Annika Walters warming up before she goes live. She wants her face and lungs to be stretched out so she can articulate. So I'm wondering if maybe that's my problem. I don't stretch my face and lungs out so I can articulate better. I don't know. So she does what's called
experiments on that.
She does the lion, which is you reach your arms out as far as you can and you open your eyes as wide as you can. And then you try to touch your tongue to your chin.
Ah, everyone turn your cameras on and do the lion right now.
Do you feel stretched?
I do, actually. I do kind of feel stretched. Oh, that was fun.
Oh, that made me so happy.
Oh, that was fantastic.
And then she did a bunch of massaging to her face. So, like, rubbing out her nose and her sinuses and her lips and jaw. And she just sat there and was like, which made me think of my grandpa because he just walks around just like. And then my uncle just did this, the, you know, thing. You know, just getting your face all warmed up. I feel warm.
This is fantastic. If you're not a patron, you're missing out on perhaps more than you've ever missed out on before.
This is great. This is so
good. You need the video version of this episode in your life, and then you need to become a patron so you can be in on the recording of the next time we do this.
All right. That's all of my dives. Now it's time for likes and dislikes, where we talk about what we liked and what we didn't like. Joe?
I feel ready to go now.
Man. Yes! So warm!
So my first like is that Leslie actually kind of gets the reaction that she wants from her giant built-up announcement to the group.
Okay.
When she reveals little Sebastian in the beginning.
She does.
Because that's kind of a rare thing. You know, she always does these big built-up introductions, and then it always falls flat. But this time, it actually blows everyone's minds.
Yep.
And so, good for her. And, of course, I love everyone's reactions to Lil Sebastian being brought in, but I love Ron's the most.
Can you do that for me?
All of his giggles. Oh, my goodness. I just love his, like, ooh.
I love his
and
hands.
All of his when, weird posturing.
Like, and then his Pac-Man hands at the end where he's like, hi.
Yes. Ron in the presence of Lil Sebastian is my absolute favorite, mm-hmm. hands down. Mm-hmm. I like April announcing Ken by just saying, this guy's here.
She did that on 93 meetings too, and that made me so happy.
It's so funny. I like the literal interpretation of the traditional Wom and Poke greeting, because I love possums, but I don't know what I'd do with a million of them, so I'm hoping that's figurative. I like the atrocity map with the fact that the atrocities are in blue. I like the way that Pawnee in the show is used as kind of a microcosm of the injustices inflicted upon Native Americans by settlers and the government.
Right.
The show, I think, is so great at using humor to keep real things in front of us that we shouldn't forget.
Yeah, you that's know, a good point.
It's kind of this great sad clown like, oh, yeah, this was actually the worst.
Yeah.
I love Ken Hotate and his razor sharp intuition, Rachel Ray and curses.
He's.
I love it. I love the development of the chemistry between Leslie and Ben.
Mm-hmm.
I like Ron, quote, not holding hands when they
so
circle
funny.
Up.
He just like stands there and not really yeah. looks at the camera.
So funny. I like Ron's Harvest Festival oversight.
Yes. Very classy of him.
I have to get back to work. I like Joan trying hard to hide her optimism and remain focused on scandal. I just respect her dedication.
She's trying. She commits.
She's trying so hard not to just get caught up in the excitement and stick to her job.
It's adorable.
And then I like Tom's complete and utter lack of ability to strike out with Joan. And it kind of seems to me like his lack of ability to sweet talk every other woman is kind of boomeranged and compounded by the universe back at Joan. And I also love that somehow Ben is always there to be sort of the avatar for our horror in those situations.
I appreciate his ability to reflect my own feelings.
Yes.
Back.
Yeah, very much so. And then I love Joan swooping in like a drama vulture upon hearing the word curse. She's really good at her job. The way that she just flips a switch, it's so good.
It's a little overwhelming, but it's also really good.
And then I like Ron's rallying speech for the sake of Lil Sebastian.
Mm-hmm.
That magnificent horse is out there and he's scared. And then I like the way that Ken spins the media coverage to his own ends. And
he sure does.
It's so timely, though. It kind of feels spooky.
Mm, I mean, tell me more.
Just the way that he can so blatantly misrepresent events to the media and the media just goes with it.
Mm-hmm.
In our day and age, it's like, you know, Parks yep. and Rec, I'd forgive you and still love you if you weren't this great at predicting the future.
Right.
And then in the subtitles, it reads as Andy saying this maze, M-A-I-Z-E, is like a maze, M-A-Z-E. And
mm-hmm. I saw that too.
That's clever, but I feel like that's giving Andy too much credit. I don't think that's what he was saying.
Oh, I hadn't thought about it in that terms. I just saw it and was like, oh, that's a funny pun. Ha ha ha.
Yeah. So I think it works on multiple levels. And maybe that's just a little joke that the writers put in there, like whoever's doing the subtitle writing, to be a little extra layer of goodness for people who watch with the subtitles on.
Extra.
I like Ron setting everyone straight on the Ferris wheel.
Yes.
So good. And then I love that Andy and April are finally established and we're at the end of their relationship drama.
About time. I mean, there's plenty of that drama in this episode, but
yeah, there's definitely hope. It's like they couldn't just leave it. You know, they had to give us one more little taste of the drama, but it's over now. So
ta-da.
I like the fact that the Wamapo Casino is featuring Rachael Ray on their marquee.
I did not see that, but that is brilliant. You didn't see that? No.
Oh, it's so good.
Good.
Yep. It's so good. It cuts to the marquee and it says tonight, Rachael Ray.
That's very well done.
I like the beginning of Ken and Leslie's friendship and kind of the mutual respect that they have for each other.
Yeah.
And then I like every instance in this episode of Ken playing white people like a fiddle.
Yes. So good.
So funny. I like Jerry being still out there in the corn maze.
Poor guy. I feel so sorry for him. He doesn't even have his meds.
And then I like conductor Ron on the train. Mm-hmm. And then my last like is Ken breaking Ben's curse.
Poof.
Like, here, dummy. So that's it for my likes. What did you like about this episode?
I'm just so happy about little Sebastian. I've been waiting for him. Waiting. And he's here. I love every single reaction to little Sebastian. Everyone. Ron's success hand clap. Donna's just open mouth, like her like super grinny open mouth smile. Andy's like, I want a picture. I want a picture. Like, of course you want a picture. April actually touched Leslie and said, wow. It's like, okay, that's a big deal. And then Ron's reachy love fingers toward little Sebastian, which I think is actually creepy. Don't ever do that to me. But it's adorable when Ron does it towards a horse. So there's that.
I just had to suppress a very mean urge, and I think you probably know what it is.
I sure do. Thank you so much. The Wamapoke used to use possum as currency. That's really funny to me. I like when Ben tries to speak Wamapoke and he says red wagon wheel incest. Effort. And then when they're like, she's like an eagle-eyed tiger, and Andy's like, new band name, I call it. I love Ron's awkwardness at not holding hands, and then he just stands there. I oddly enough love the Donna Ann interaction. Like, Donna cares, but not that much. She cares at like a 1.2 out of 10, and then Ann engages at like an 8 out of 10. Which brings about Donna's comment of, normally people tell you to talk about your problems. I'm going to recommend that you bottle that noise up. And then Anne, that's what my mailman said. That comeback, that's what my mailman said, is brilliant.
Yes.
Just need to point that out. I love Joan's intentional look at the camera and the, we'll see.
She's so good.
And then her almost handshake toward Ben in the recall. That was good. I like Ben's comeback of, I was also the shortstop on the JV baseball team, but no one ever brings that up. Joan's sudden turn to, let's get some shots of chip paint and crying babies. Spooky traffic lights. You know the drill. That implies they've done this so many times. Mm-hmm. Don't they have enough B-roll of it by now? I like Leslie's maybe overreaction where she's like, this is a poop tornado, a poop NATO. This is a classic four rod disaster. And Ben's like, do people in this town really believe in curses?
Four rod disaster, new band name, I call it.
Good, good. I like that she used the example of a traveling magician came through one time and he pulled a rabbit out of a hat and the mob burned him at the stake for being a witch in 1973. And that painting that she referred to was not in the text.
Man, that really feels like it should be.
I know. All the other paintings were in the text. It was in the same style as the rest of them.
Yeah.
I like Jerry's kind of hilarious anxiety where he's like, no, what are do gonna you? And then Tom's very fast response of, what am do gonna I? And then I love that Jerry anxious farts by Tom. I love the subtlety of News Channel 4, number one in curse coverage. WTNW News 4, Curse Watch. They're making such a big deal out of it. Once again, their graphics are amazing. I love them.
Yeah, I thought you were going to enjoy the lower thirds.
Oh, for sure. I like when Leslie said crap on a spatula. I like Jerry standing up for himself. I like Ron being the dad of the moment. Being like, Andy, she's mad at you because you said awesome sauce instead of I love you too. April, he loves you. Stop being a child. I love how he calls yes. everybody out in yes. that.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ability, not in the ability, but in the space of that truth coming out, everyone's just like, oh, well, sorry. Okay. So that was beautiful. I like Ken finally working with Leslie with the generator and lifting the curse. And I love the subtlety of, I'm not saying anything, just making up words. No one can understand me anyway. Doobie. Doobie. Do. And then when Ken throws the dust on Ben, is this the guy? Here, dummy. I like the reaction shot of Jerry being left in the corn maze, just eating an ear yes. of corn while looking disheveled. And then wrapping it up with Ben, even though he got the shirt, and then he looks at the cameras like, I don't get it at all.
Love that.
What did you dislike?
There's not a ton here, but I do feel bad for Ben not getting what's so cool about little Sebastian. It kind of feels like those pranks we used to play where you get a group of people to stare at a spot on the ceiling pretending there's something there to confuse the people who aren't in on it.
Yeah.
So it is funny, but at the same time, he's left out.
Poor guy.
I dislike Andy's response to April's I love you. And if I'm honest, I am of two minds on this one.
Okay.
So on one hand, it feels a little bit unnecessary to introduce more drama for these two when it feels like they've already been put through so much. But on the other hand, I feel like this situation was necessary for the development of both characters. Because once they're established, their relationship is set in stone and the writers never mess with it again, which I really appreciate.
Yeah.
Seems like when a central couple of a show gets together, sometimes the writers don't know what to do with them, and then they reintroduce tension to the relationship or break them back up entirely to try to bring new life to the show. Looking at you, new girl. This doesn't happen with Andy and April. And I think for them to be a strong couple, especially given Andy as a character, this needed to happen. Andy needed to understand that April has needs that will require him to grow and stretch himself. She's very understanding of him, but she can't always just meet him on his level.
Yep.
She needs him to step up and actually express himself. And this is a big step towards him learning how to do that, I think. So totally. Conflicted.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And then my last dislike is Joan trying to go back to the Ice Town well just because she can't find Scandal anywhere else. Leave Ben alone.
It's time. It's time.
All right. So what did you dislike?
I didn't like that April couldn't be direct with Andy and Andy didn't see and respond well to April. No surprise here. I am not a fan of Tom's insecurity again and how he immediately blames his mistake on Jerry, then gaslights him. Come on. Are you kidding me? I don't like that Tom commented on Joan's boobs. The story I tell myself is that Tom is so desperate for affirmation that he makes little Sebastian affirm him. Like when it's in his little conversation with little Sebastian.
Uh-huh.
And then he's like, most people look at little Sebastian and they see a famous mini horse. I see an advertising opportunity for my club, the Snake Hole Lounge. And the sign has the logo on it and LED lights. Come on now. You don't need a coat on the horse. It's warm outside.
Mm-hmm.
Schmuck. I don't like the amount of literal fake news the Pawnee Press Corps is producing and their hunger for disaster.
Yeah.
And so Leslie has to get up there and be like, there's no food shortage. There are not, as one reporter suggested, dozens of escaped convicts meandering around the carnival. And at no time was any Parks Department member feasting on petting zoo animals. And then Joan being like, how big of a disaster will this be on a scale of 9 to 10? Which really could work well in your favor if you just say 9, because on that scale, that's equivalent of the lowest number. So, ta-da. And then purred, the statement that this reporter has is a question. Will that be enough to lift the curse? I love it basically every time Purred talks.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am frustrated that the press blew the generator. Come on now. And then the worst of all of them is that I hate that Ben thinks he is the curse. Things didn't get worse when he got involved. He actually green-lighted the project.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually really sad to me that he thinks he's the curse.
And now it's time for the coordination of the beautiful rule-breaking moth, the segment in which we choose one specific thing that was the breakout star of the episode. So, Joy, who or what is your beautiful rule-breaking moth?
Lil Sebastian, because he helped the show build heart, show endearment, and he helped each character shine. How about you?
Yep, that's a very good one. Mine is the ending sequence that showcases Leslie's moment of triumph and the aerial shot of the Harvest Festival. And for me, this is the moment that Leslie Knope and Michael Scott from The Office, this is the moment that their paths truly diverge forever. Leslie has won her first true big battle, and seeing her pull off such a large, genuine triumph, the show emphatically reminds us that Leslie is a competent, hopeful character who is bound for bigger and better things. So for me, this is the moment that truly establishes the show's hopeful, optimistic feel and grander scope from The Office.
Good insight. You're like two for two today.
Just Husky Joe over here doing my best. HJ, hold it down.
Okay, so the problem is if we do Husky Joe and Husky Joy, it's HJ either way.
HJ either way.
New band name, I call it.
There you go.
Now it's time for Shaming the Jerry, the part of the show where we shame one particular thing for bringing the episode down or being unnecessarily annoying. My Jerry's Tom, and we're not surprised. What are your thoughts, Joe?
Yeah, it's not a huge one. Like, I've had Jerry's where I'm just so annoyed with that one thing or really felt like it held the episode back. And this one isn't a huge deal, but it is also Tom. He's just kind of annoying in this one to me. So we have the same Jerry.
I'm excited about that.
And also, I have to make the observation that if HJ Either Way is our new band name, then our first album would be Reachy Love Fingers.
HJ Either Way with our debut album Reachy Love Fingers.
Oh my goodness. And now it's time for the awarding of the Lil Sebastians.
We are so in meta right now.
I know. It's just layers on layers. This is the ceremony in which we rate each episode against the entire catalog of Parks and Recreation episodes by awarding it between 1 and 5 Lil Sebastians. 1 obviously being the lowest and 5 representing perfection, the most magical episodes of all time. So Joy, how many Lil Sebastians are you awarding the Harvest Festival?
I rated this one a 5.
A 5.
Because I love this episode with my whole heart, and it brings me so much warmth and happiness, and I love doing research for it, and I laughed out loud. What'd you rate it?
I also rated this episode a 5.
What?
Yep, which means that this episode is inducted into the Parks and Rewatch
Hall of Fame.
For me, this episode introduces Lil Sebastian probably one of the most incredible characters in television history, given the fact that he only appears once in the entire series and yet manages to leave such an impact on the characters, on the culture of the show and the greater culture of Parks and Recreation and all of its fans. Heck, Lil Sebastian is in our logo.
That's true. And on my shirt.
As a show, as Parks and Rewatch. So I think that just because of the cultural juggernaut that Lil Sebastian represents, it would be hard not to rate this episode as a 5, but then you also get the payoff of the Harvest Festival, Leslie's first triumph. The show, I think, once and for all parts ways from The Office in people's minds and kind of in the cultural zeitgeist of Michael Schur shows. And so, yeah, this one's a 5 for me.
You just hit at least 3 delightful word point winning things right there. So proud of you.
All right, everybody. Where in the world is John Ralphio? On 3, 1, 2, 3.
Where in the world is John?
Where you at?
Yeah! I like how clearly my wife was embarrassed because she just dipped as soon as it was done. Great job, everyone.
Proud of you.
As always, this segment is for episodes where the character is not featured. We speculate where he might be and what he might be doing. So, Joy, what do you think John Ralphio is up to during the events of Harvest Festival?
I think he got stuck in the raccoon pen with his clan because they were captured in a late evening raid by Eagleton's elite animal control SWAT team. Then they got tranked. Then they got left in a fenced-in area in Ramsey Park. And so it only made sense to display them in the pen at the festival. Obviously.
All right. All right. So John Ralphio's capers with the raccoon gang continue.
Of course. What about you?
I think he tried to hit on Tilda Bird and got knocked out with a basketball.
Take that. Okay, so real quick. We got jammed. I said I would update stuff on pizza. And I will and /am. By the time this episode comes out, there's going to be an episode of my podcast, Here We Are, What Makes Us Human, all about pizza. It comes out.
Yes.
For those of us who are listening with us right now, it comes out in 2 days on Wednesday. And for those who are listening later, it's already out. So check out my podcast, Here We Are, What Makes Us Human. I put all of my pizza research from this show into that episode.
And it is glorious.
Bonus.
Can confirm.
So there you go.
All right, now it's time for Johnny Karate's Karate Moves to Success, an inspirational segment in which we apply the karate moves to success in our own lives. So, Joy, what would you like to karate chop this week?
Early darkness, because it comes and then I feel like it's bedtime and I look at the clock and it's 5:30.
Yes, absolutely. I think we can all agree with that one.
How about you?
COVID-19. For obvious reasons.
I shouldn't laugh at that, but I did.
No,
sorry.
It's okay. It is funny. I got out of bed today and took a shower, and that left me feeling roughly like I did the last time I climbed an actual mountain in a day. So thanks, COVID.
Oof.
So let's segue out of that into be nice to someone. So I can start this one off because it's kind of on the same topic, but I'd just like to say thank you to everyone who has helped and encouraged both me and my wife while I've been down and out and we've been quarantined. It's been a great reminder that no man is an island, especially when they have a bad virus.
True.
And special shout out to patron Andy, who has been our grocery getter while both of us are quarantined.
Good job, friend of the show, Andy. I thumbs up you. Might be nice.
Who be nice, Joy?
I didn't know. I was like, are you gonna say it? Do I just segue? What do you want me to do? I don't know. My be nice to someone this week is the book Burnout by Drs. Amelia and Emily Nagoski. It is mind-blowing, let me tell you. It's connecting all the dots in my head that I didn't know needed connecting until I saw words that made my insides make sense. Highly recommend.
Perfect description. Mm-hmm. Definitely gonna have to check that out.
Mm-hmm. Does not suck.
Wow. Well, this has been just an incredible episode. So much fun. So much fun to do with our patrons. So if you would like more of Parks and Rewatch in your life, you can follow us on Instagram at Rewatch Parks. You can join our exclusive Facebook group, mm-hmm. the official Parks and Rewatch fan club. So very official. And if you would like to get the full uncut, unedited, and video versions of all our podcasts and this podcast, trust me, you want it. You can find that over on our Patreon, patreon.com/parksandrewatch. And you can also send us an email at rewatchparks@gmail.com. No matter how you are reaching out to us, no matter what you're reaching out to us about, we would just love to hear from you. And one of our favorite ways to hear from you is if you're enjoying the show, if you'd leave us a rating and review on your podcast platform of choice.
One of our show fans, Leah, posted a review on Apple for us. She said, 5 stars, phenomenal. I absolutely love this show. I've wanted to write a review for a while and have struggled with the right words. After listening to Joe and Joy in the most recent episode, I feel that now would be a great time to say the following. I relish your wit. I salsa your faces. You guys get a pizza in my heart every time. Truly, I love everything about this show. My favorite thing is when you both get to laughing so hard you just can't stop. I love it. It brings me such joy. Thanks, Leah.
I love that review. Thanks so much again for joining us, patrons. This has been an absolute blast. Joy, cue us in.
What do we say? Bye! Reggie love fingers, everyone.
Yes.
This is how lore gets started.